Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, and it is February the 27th, the last Tuesday in the month. And I'm going to assume that most of you can hear me tonight. Sister Ann, can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear, Sister Betty.
All right. And tonight, a theme that we owe partially to Sister Ann. But before I address that, I think you all know by now, we lost another comrade. We lost another warrior. I will let Brother Kazi and Comrade Sister Ann fill you in on the details. Our theme tonight is a very interesting one. And it's based on the fact that it's just slavery by another name. That is basically what we are looking at. The whole from high school to the death camp prisons, black hair apparently is subversive. And I'm just going to use that concept to illustrate that it's just slavery by another name. And this is the nature of capitalism. It just morphs into another version of oppression. You win one war, they change the rules on you, keep your political prisoners in, and you got to fight another war all over again. Without further ado,
the ex-political prisoners and the young people who are taking up this struggle. I excuse am enjoying my reward of meeting and being a part of this movement. And so what am I doing? The Political Prisoner Working Group, that is to get people to join the very important part of every history of oppressed people and the oppressor. That is those who understand the problem and take up arms against the problem, the oppressor. And those who become a part of another nation, a singular, cohesive, understanding nation of political and ex-political prisoners. They understand the need to be a part of a unit. They understand without regard to race, religion, color, gender, etc., that we are one, doing one thing, fighting oppression, bringing liberation. When I say freedom, they do freedom. And so, as our work, what must we do as a political prisoner working group? What we must do is learn what a political prisoner is. We must learn what they do. We must learn to love them for what they have done. And we must organize to free them, Lord.
Right.
Free them for what they have done for us so that we could have this moment. Because understand something, there would be nothing we could say or do without their sacrifice. They have sacrificed, and as a result, we are here. But we must earn the air we breathe. We must earn the little bit of freedom that is to communicate with each other that we have by bringing them home. It is very difficult to think that at this moment, this COVID terrorism that has been imposed on our freedom fighters on top of the death camps that they are in, being murdered by lack of medical care. And now COVID comes on top of that. So every one of our political prisoners is facing a death sentence on top of the 27, 30, 40, 50 years that they have been in there. It is a crime.
Against humanity.
Against humanity. And it is a shame on us that we allow this condition to continue. We say freedom. We say, Uhuru, we must do freedom by working in every arena, in the religious arena. And I myself am a non-theist. And we must work in our social arena. And above all, we must work in our political arena. We should end our political slavery. We've ended chattel slavery, but we are political slaves. And when I say political slaves, that is doing political work without political remuneration. What is slavery? Doing work without remuneration. And we must stop being willing political slaves. Never give your vote to anyone who is running for political office who does not support our political prisoners. And when we learn that, our brothers and sisters who fought, died, and imprisoned for us will come home. they do. We must learn to love them for what they have done, and we must organize to free them, Lord.
Right.
Free them for what they have done for us so that we can have this moment. Because understand something.
All right. So you know the charge, and you know why we're playing this tonight. Because, once again, Mamiya's life is being threatened by medical torture. And we know what was happening with Leonard Peltier. And we know what is happening with Kamal Siddiqui. We are their liberators. We must fight for them on the outside, just as they are holding strong on the inside. Without further ado, before we go to New York City Jericho for a report and update on the latest, I want to remind you again that this theme talks about from high school to the prisons, black hair is subversive. That young man in Texas is fighting the same fight that brother comrade Mamiya fought. They tried to take his locks away. So there is a message here. The fact that they chose February, so-called Black History Month, to send this message to us that we don't have the right to be who and what nature created us to be. It is our human right to look like what we look like. But they're going to make us over in their image. That's the message. And there's only one answer to a message like that. So without further ado, we're going to switch on Brother Professor Louis, and we're so glad to have you back. Let's hope we won't have too many interruptions. Professor Louis, thank you. Your mic is open. Thank you for the call of concern. Professor Louis?
Yeah.
Your mic is open.
I hear you.
Is everything all right? Can you recite?
Yeah, sure. It's anybody's guess, but more or less, this is a story about whiteness. My skin, you know, is white as snow. I take it with me everywhere I go, and what I got is not a passing phase. I'm white 24 hours a day, and anywhere I go, I hope I show. I already know it don't make me high. It don't make me low, but if you try, you can't deny what you see with your sight. You get a softer life if your skin is white. Your neighborhood slicker, get a bank loan quicker. They sell better liquor. The school bus comes. The subway runs. The work gets done. The potholes fixed. The criminals licked. The IRS tricked. The garbage picked up. The library fixed up. The streetlight kept up. The playground swept up. We get less fake, cheap drugs, less cucarachas and bugs, less 9mm slugs. You get a better house, better job, even better health, better business, better money and wealth. And if you wonder what keeps white on top, check who gets stopped by the highway cop. 'Cause anyone who looks sees white people got the biggest crooks, corporate billionaires who cook the books. But if you're going to bring just one thing that you know for sure, black people are going to jail much more. So you could like it or dislike it, but it's a fact. Not everything comes from the way you act. All over the world, they let you in by the color of your money and the color of your skin. The color of your money and the color of your skin. And the lighter and whiter get an easier way. And what's the whole story, Morning Glory? What can you say and who can you name? Who is it that really runs the game? If you looked, you saw white people get a little more. But if you look behind the door, it's rich white people who it's really all for. And when the white working guy blames the guy who's black, the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. 'Cause all over the world, Jim, the money's pouring in, lied and justified by the color of the skin. They're just dark people, so we don't pay them a lot. Bring them war and take what they got and gone with the breeze. When all those jobs go overseas, the black and the white working guy feel the squeeze. And like I said, the white guy got a little ahead, but when he fights the war, he is just as dead. Salute the flag and do your duty, but keep one eye on the kid with the hoodie. It's a fact, Jack. It's no fun to act, always checking behind your back. Blame everything on the brown and the black while the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. And my skin, you know, it's white as snow. I take it with me everywhere I go, and what I got is not a passing phase. I'm white 24 hours a day, and sure enough, how this stuff begin, where we don't like someone from the color of the skin, where the whole thing come from. Did a white guy curse a black guy's mom? Black guy cursed him back, and it was on. Now, I hate to tell you, but I got to say, it didn't really happen that way. Start up the pump, and right from the jump, it was kind of crummy. Just an old slick trick to pick up big money. It starts out with owners and slaves, and right to the grave, it has never, ever gone away. The owner gave the poor white guy just a little more, told him maybe one day you'll be the big boss, made him foreman, overseer, manager, cop, to help keep the rich guy on top. You get a little extra. You think the big guys are generous. They get you to do stuff against your own interests. And I pray today nobody plays me for a clown to help the same people who are putting me down, because white gets a break most of the time, but white still stands on the unemployment line. And you thank the bank, the landlord, they throw you a bone, but they still throw white people out of their home. And that white soldier who fought the war, what's he eating out the garbage for? And if white is up there so high and mighty, why you need three jobs to feed your family? White, black, brown, red, and yellow, it's always been the same. Divide and conquer is the name of the game. And if you think people's color is your problem, you got some problems, but you will never solve them. And when you throw the blame down on the brown and the black, the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. And what takes and makes all this mess and division, it's called institutionalized racism. The cops, the DA, the judge, the jail, the law, the politicians without fail, the big banks and corporations, the newspaper and the TV stations, it's not deep down in you. It's not deep in me. It's way down deep in our society, where whites got to fight black, brown, red, and yellow, forever battling down here below, while high as the sky up in the office tower, filthy rich white guys hold the money and the power. And now you don't got to guess, more or less, this was a story about whiteness. And you could look in a good book, don't take it from me. It is only the truth that will set us free in the mosque, the synagogue, by the church steeple, deep down the bottom. We're all just people, and no matter what your place, someday you gotta face, there is only one human race, and no matter where you run under the sun, this whole world belongs to everyone. And my skin, you know, it's still white as snow. I still take it with me everywhere I go, and what I got is not a passing phase. I'm still white 24 hours a day, but it's okay to say, from here to kingdom come. White don't got to make me dumb, and I hope my color don't make me too soft to let greedy rich white people rip me off. And wherever I go, I hope I show I already know it don't make you high and it don't make you low.
Well, all right. Thank you, Professor Louie. It's so good to have you back. And once again, thank you for that wonderful, encouraging call when we had our issues last week. All right, we're going to keep this moving. As I said, Sister Anne has news for us tonight, and I know many of you will want to comment and respond to this news. Sister Anne, your mic is open. New York City, Jericho is in the house.
Okay, I would like to start with the very sad news that our dear beloved comrade, warrior, sister, Yolua Ferguson, went to the ancestors this morning. Happy to report she was surrounded by family and love, which is always important. And for people who may not know who Sister Yolua is and was, I will let them know a little bit about her. Yolua Ferguson is a great-great-grandmother with over 60 years of activism in the struggle for human rights and the liberation of black people. She's one of the 500 signers of the Declaration of Independence of the Republic of New Africa and served as chairperson of the People's Center Council, the governing body of the PGRNA, for 6 years. She's the widow of Baba Herman Ferguson, an icon in the black liberation struggle. She's also an educator. Yolua actively struggled against the racism in the public schools of New York City, in the classroom, and at times going toe-to-toe in battles with the New York City education bureaucracy. She and Herman were very, very involved in the Ocean Hill-Brownsville struggle. She continued her passion and concern for the education of young people during her voluntary exile with her husband in Guyana, South America. They were there for 19 years. She served as the executive editor of the Guyana National Service Publishing Center, writing, editing, and publishing educational materials for the schools and training materials for the Guyana National Service. When Herman returned to the U.S., Yolua was catapulted into the area of political work, first struggling for Herman's release, then becoming a staunch advocate for the release of all political prisoners. As a member of the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee, she initiated and spearheaded the dinner tribute to the families of political prisoners in the New York area. She also initiated and coordinated the essay contest, The Legacy of Malcolm X, Its Meaning and Its Message, held annually for many years in the schools of New York City and Newark. She points with pride to her 10-year service as editor of the Quarterly Digest, Nation Time, which was a fantastic newspaper. The newspaper was devoured by our incarcerated brothers and sisters and became their link to the struggle outside and inside the walls. In July of 2009, Yolua and Herman relocated to their daughter's home in North Carolina, and Herman joined the ancestors on September 25th, 2014, and Yolua just joined them today, February 27th, 2024. And another great thing that Yolua did was she wrote this book, which is fantastic, which is called An Unlikely Warrior, Herman Ferguson, The Evolution of a Black Nationalist Revolutionary. And it's really more than just a story of him. It's a story of both of them and their lives, beautiful pictures in there, you know, over the years. Really a tremendous book, and also has the complete curriculum that Herman had devised to have a school, you know, for black people with, you know, a good curriculum that was totally, you know, demonized by, you know, people here because they were saying, oh, he's training people to, you know, fight wars and all that, which he was not. And so one of the addenda to the books is a complete copy of that wonderful curriculum. So I would encourage people to look for that book. Please do not get it from Amazon. An Unlikely Warrior, Herman Ferguson, The Evolution of a Black Nationalist Revolutionary by Yolua Ferguson. So I just want to say, Yolua Ferguson, presente, presente, presente. And as soon as we know of the arrangements, we will let people know. So that is one thing. Now, I don't know if you want me to talk about some of the other things that are going on, like the urgent situation of dear brother Mumia.
You can continue, even though I know more people will want to comment on Sister Yolua. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure, they will. Okay, so as people may or may not know, Mumia, once again, is in dire straits with his health care. He had double bypass heart surgery in 2021, and he's supposed to have a cardiac diet and regular exercise, right? And, of course, it's been almost 3 years, and the prison has not done either of those things. There's no opportunity for exercise. He used to be able to walk around in the day room. They're not letting him do that anymore. So, you know, walking around in your prison cell is not exercise. Very small space. And he also has that horrible, horrible skin condition where he's itching constantly 24/7. And, of course, you know, the prison diet and the limited exercise are in violation of the standards of cardiac care and his doctor's orders. So we're asking people to make some phone calls, write some letters, send some emails to various officials in the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, so-called, and also to the governor of Pennsylvania, And all that information is up on jerichoNY.org. You don't have to look for it. It's right on the first page. I would encourage everybody to please do this. We even have a little sample script you can use when you're calling or for letters and emails. Of course, you can change it and put in your own words. But very important for Mumia, you know, the man has been in prison endlessly for crime he didn't commit, and they're actively trying to kill him. You know, and they have been actively trying to kill him for years. They first had him on death row. We finally got him out of there. Now they have him on slow death row, as he himself has said. So very important for people to do this and do it, you know, do it regularly. There's like six different people to get in touch with. You don't have to do it all in one day. You could do two a day, you know, and make it a couple of times a week. And also while you're at it, Kevin Rashid Johnson is also in dire straits, and that's on our website right below Mumia. So that would be two prisoners right now that we can say really, really need our help urgently. So take the time, please, and make those phone calls and send those emails, because we could save somebody's life, and we need to save somebody's life. So let's get busy, folks.
Thank you so much. All right, I see Sister Julia has joined us. Somehow or another, she didn't get her link right away. When I send out this announcement, if it comes back to me, then I know, I usually assume everybody else got it. But Sister Julia, thank you for being a soldier and hanging in there. Please enlighten us and welcome back. I know you've been very ill. I hope that this means you are recovering.
Yes, thank you, Sister Betty. I would like to relay to you the words of the son of Mumia and Wadia when he told us on February 11th that he went to meet his father in prison. And Mumia said to him, quote, "The loss of your mother broke me. I am so scarred." And, that was Mumia diagnosing himself, because his skin is covered with scars, with a burning itching all over. And so here is a poem for Mumia in memory of Wadia. Where do the tears Mumia needs to cry go to? Where do his unswimmed tears end up? His skin cell calls out like a riverbed reduced to grating, wounding pebbles. His skin feels like an unending parchment where during his sleepless nights he charts his burning loss. Each skin cell has become the gasping fish of his sadness, unable to breathe for want of the water of his beloved kin at home, mourning behind bars like Mumia does, is the extreme of sensory deprivation when the skin is condemned to weep alone. And I didn't even realize it, but this image of burning skin has repeated itself really graphically and horribly in our minds when on Sunday Aaron Bushnell self-immolated himself. So I did write another poem about him, and here it goes. And what if we have now waited too long and the word genocide has become obsolete? What if we have reached the time slip forward where the word genocide can no longer coincide with the real meaning of bombs exploding the people of Palestine into human rubble? What if on the ground annihilation is beyond the barrier of sounds of the words usually used to say it? What if the word genocide has become a euphemism? What if what Palestine is living through is no longer the dictionary or genocide convention definition of the term, but beyond what can be shown and seen? What did Aaron Bushnell see that he could not unsee, but still had to show us through the flames of self-immolation? What do his quickly washed away remains tell us about a charred truth his learned language could no longer even name? And I would just like to say that Aaron Bushnell's gift to us, if placed in historical context, takes us back to a letter written by the monk Thich Nhat Hanh to Martin Luther King in 1965 about the real meaning of self-immolation during the Vietnam War. This letter is poignant and speaks about the importance of breaking silence and being heard against the corporate odds. Thich Nhat Hanh states that self-immolation is not suicide, but a supreme form of testimony to the world. Quote, "To burn oneself by fire is to prove that what one is saying is of the utmost importance. To say something while experiencing this kind of pain is to say it with the utmost of courage, frankness, determination, and sincerity," unquote. We remember that Martin Luther King was inspired by this very letter to pronounce his speech about silence and breaking silence at Riverside Church.
Thank you so much. Thank you. When you're not here, we know the difference. Thank you. And I think tonight, more than anybody else, you exemplify what Comrade Ralph meant when he said, pick up the work. It's on you now. No matter how you feel, you do pick up the work, and I thank you. I truly thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are going to go to our comrade in Boston, and I think he's got some words for us tonight. Brother Kazi, your
peace,
mic is open.
Peace, peace, sister. Such an eloquent and beautiful show tonight. I'm really enjoying it. You know, I can't add, you know, I just think of Il Lua and our comrade, sister. I'm really going to miss her critical analysis in the meetings. And, I mean, she hasn't been there for a minute, but she brought me in, you know, her and Herman. So really going to miss her. And I can't say any more than what Ann already said about the sister. You know, and as far as Mumia, I mean, do you know, we know these are death camps. These are death camps, and they meant to be slave camps, death camps, ever since they brought us here. You know, that's all it's been. But we continue to fight, and we got to get them out, you know. You know, like, people should recognize from the very beginning when they wrote that 14th Amendment that they said, you know, slavery is abolished with the exception that if you commit a felony. And so people should understand that, you know. And that's what our political prisoners are in. People are standing up, fighting back, and we need to get them out. We need to make those calls, step it up, block up those fax machines or emails. You know, they have to hold them for like 3 years, so just clog them up, you know, and be out in front of the people's houses. Take it to them.
Like Brother Ralph, can't be political slaves any longer.
That's right. People just got to stand up and step it
Thank
up,
you
know, because we don't want to see any more people dying in jail.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
On the move.
On the move.
Wonderful.
We're going to go a little further Midwest. And Comrade Sayeto, your mic is open. Thank you for being able to join us tonight. Another soldier, y'all. Another soldier.
Uhuru, I just want to first of all give out presente to Alua Ferguson. Powerful leadership that led so many in the struggle. Just as Comrade Ralph points, just as Comrade Lynn Stewart and so many countless others, I want to say that I'm grateful for this program. Sister Betty, you are carrying on this struggle as you were given your charge by Brother Ralph, and you're doing a stupendous job. I have to say that. Sister Julia,
thank you.
I'm going to tell you that. I was going to be giving the dissertation basically on Bushnell and I think Quang Duke. You must have been in my house. Were you in my house? I was just kidding. But the fact is, we're dealing with heartless people, these things that make decisions on our lives on a daily basis, decisions on Mumia's life, and other revolutionaries that are incarcerated, our babies are being forced, as Sister Betty spelled out in the beginning, to attempt to break their spirits by having them cut their, when they're following the rules that were given to them in the very beginning, these rules that the colonizer lays out on our daily lives. We all have attempted to live by the rule. Never can have set with the rule because it seems like we always break a rule. And those in power who are drunk with power, surely we see the weakness that's going on now. They're falling apart. And it's a good day. It's a good day for the revolutionary. It's a great day to watch them now amongst themselves with division and divisiveness. And don't have fear, because once it falls apart, then we become whole in the sense that we knew we were right in the first place. I'm speaking of all freedom-loving people. And I have to say this, too, because there's so many people with an outcry that we all know, whether it be in the neighborhood or in the office, whether it be in these schools or even in the courthouse. People know the difference between right and wrong. And then you want to bring religiosity into the game, but it's a forced religion that you don't. I'm speaking of the ones in power. Don't even abide by, you sheer hypocrites. But then you lay out the groundwork that you said we must live by, and as my comrade just mentioned, how dare Amir's condition have to be as it is, or anybody else's, for that matter, just because we just want to be left alone. We want to live our lives. We want to know what freedom is, because by all intents and purposes, we don't know what freedom is. And then for us to give up hope, have you ever seen us, and I know all of us here have, when we give up hope, how we break down, how we mourn, how we moan, definitely heart-wrenching, as we all on this call have seen time and time again, and even in our have gone through ourselves. But we are winning. I'll say that. We are winning because it's falling apart. These genocides that are occurring across the globe is a key point of observation that desperation is on the rise. We are winning. Now, I would like to make this announcement before I shut my mouth. You know the trial for Chairman Omari Yeshitela is going to be on September the 3rd. It's going to be due for a four-week trial. It's staged for 4 weeks. Notice I said staged. It's a game to the colonizer to watch us have to be tortured. They love it. Now, ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun, because this will reverse. But please, if you can make it to Tampa, Florida, where the trial, any one of us can make it, where the trial will commence on September the 3rd, 2024, in the federal courthouse, please do. Go to handsoffuhuru.org. I want to tell you all that I listen to how much I appreciate you all so much, because just like any one of us, we don't know when our time is up, but we do what we do for the furtherance of us all. I'm going to say, Uhuru, vanguard up, fist up, and fight back.
Uhuru, and thank you, as always. Remember that date in September, folks. Show up in the courts in Florida. Let's blow it out. Let's blow it out. We're going to move right along, I believe. Brother Henry's in the house. We're going to try and open up his mic and ask him for his usual words of wisdom.
Yes, good evening, sisters and brothers. I want to return to the topic from last week in reference to slavery by another name, and I've listed a series of examples that I believe speak to that problem. An all-volunteer army or military is an example of slavery by another name. AFRICOM, situated on the continent. NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Congressional Black Caucus, when they sit on their hands and endorse trillion-dollar war budgets. The free enterprise system, solitary confinement, violation of parole, blockades against Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, etc., U.S. and Israeli genocidal assault on Palestine, the constant refrain, our democracy, as though they were the ones who invented democracy, which they did not, capitalism, anti-communism, the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a cynical way of diverting people's attention from being robbed by the Biden administration, gerrymandering, suspect, and finally Gaza, which has been turned into a morgue by the United States and Israel. And so I just wanted to share those examples of slavery by another name with our group tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to open up the mic for 7785, but before we do that, I think Sister Ann has an announcement regarding what you just mentioned, Comrade Henry, the fighting in Gaza. Sister Ann, did you want to repeat that sentence?
It has been reported, this is in the New York Post, that U.S. Airman Aaron Bushnell had classified knowledge of U.S. forces fighting in Gaza tunnels on the night before he set himself on fire.
Whoa. Thank you.
So you know. Yes, he claimed he had tunnels under Gaza. He served in the Air Force's 70th Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Wing.
All right, sister. Thank you very much. Okay, moving right along. 7785, if you want to make a comment, welcome. Your mic is open. And thank you, Brother Henry. Thank you.
I'm just mostly listening this evening. Just got back from a Black History event, so let me pass it on to the next person, and I'll keep listening.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Brother Saddam, let's see if you have any comments you want to make from the Republic of New Africa. Hello?
Connection show, connection program, what's happening tonight. Greetings to everybody. I won't keep everyone too long. I certainly want to say rest in power to Mama Ialoa. And continue on the work. And thank you very much, Mama Betty, as you are continuing on the work that Baba Ralph Pointer appointed us all to do. So salute to you, and greetings to everyone. Free to learn.
I think if you heard his comments at the beginning of the program, he genuinely loved our political prisoners, and he wanted us to pick up the work. Thank you so much for your comments. They give me strength. Thank you. All right, we want to continue. I see that Brother Joel didn't give up on us. We're going to try and open up his mic. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, it's a very focused and dedicated discussion tonight, as usual, but even more focused in a certain way, because I guess in reflection of the situation that's going on in across the country, in every locality, and as well as globally. The polarization has never really been greater. And we have to be reminded, like a lot of people are looking at what's happening in the Middle East, and they feel that it's genocide by the Israelis under the extremist Zionist leadership of Netanyahu and so on. But in many ways, the primary role in that genocide, as in genocide around the world, that's just one of the spots where it's going on, mixed with settler colonialism and various degrees of capitalist slavery of one type or another. We have to recognize that we live in the belly of the beast, and that it's the United States that's number one enabling and funding and fanning the flames of genocide in the Middle East, we have a special duty because we are in the belly of the beast to oppose it, and to oppose it in a focused way. That this all of this genocide that's going on is really coming from the capitalist USA, imperialist USA, and is an extension of it. These are all different things that are going on, are different paws of what used to be depicted as an octopus, sometimes still is. It's an octopus, and we're the only ones that are in a position to make the most decisive impact in order to stop all of this that's going on around the world and allow a different momentum in the world towards humanity, towards a shared world that is the only shared in a just way, which is the only way that there could be a peace and survival. And I want to stress that the discussions that are had on this program every week are very important, especially in that they should motivate people, because they give people the motivation that also derives from those who have made sacrifices to strike those blows inside the belly of the beast and bring about worldwide changes. And a lot of what's going on today, again, locally, in different localities, nationwide, and around the world, are based on ideas and organized actions around those ideas that have come together as a result of the struggles in which the political prisoners, many of which are still still suffering in prison decades and decades later, many of whom are totally innocent of the of any charges, were framed up simply because they were part of the struggle, or especially if they played outstanding roles in the struggle. And not everybody gets the credit for the roles that they've played. It's not just a handful of people. It's thousands and thousands of people, and it's really this calling of attention to those who have sacrificed has to be done on a wider and wider scale, because otherwise, so that we have that feeling of duty and obligation to continue the struggle and to build the necessary solidarity. I had the radio on a few minutes ago on WBAI, and there's a discussion now about an organization which was called the White Rose. And these were students that, university students inside Nazi Germany, and this was already into the time when they had already attacked Russia, so it wasn't just when it was beginning, but in its late phases, after it had been in power going on a decade. And they came together. Some of them had been going along with the propaganda and the actions of the state, but came to realize how wrong it was. Others were always opposed, and they began to create mainly flyers to expose and discredit the propaganda that the Nazis were putting out. Eventually, they as far as I know, the known members of it all paid with their lives. They're an example to us also of where we live in the continuation of the Third Reich in relation to the rest of the globe today. The country where the spirit and repression of fascism is coming together more and more sharply, and it has to be stopped before it gets to its full degree. It's really already engaging in what's been called in the world court genocide. This could not be done without the diplomatic, economic, and military support of the United States, that's supplying all the arms, all the technology, all the diplomacy, and everything that keeps racial supremacist formation in the Middle East together, and day to day is paying with taxpayers money, and money that's stolen from the rest of the world every day to enable this genocide to take place. And with the administration only occasionally talking halfway out of both sides of its mouth because it's under tremendous pressure to disassociate itself, but it refuses to, and materially it can't because of its material connection making all of this happen. And this didn't just happen out of the blue or in response to a rebellion that took place on October 7th. This has been planned for a long time. And it goes all the way back at least to the 1800s when first French and then British foreign policy, and then and after that, the official Zionist movement contemplated building this kind of a structure in the Middle East and openly discussed that they had a slogan of a land without people for a people without land, and it was a lie because people were living here for thousands of years. And what they meant by a land without people is that they would actually drive the people out of their homes and off the land and to expand and to become a major, if not the major, world power. And already we see the degree to which the influence has gone where after they've been depriving food and water to the Palestinian population in Gaza and have been indicted for that by the World Court, and even the American judge had to vote in favor of that resolution. Then they went, the Israelis won better by defunding UNRWA, which is the United Nations agency that could distribute any life-sustaining food, water, and other supplies to the besieged Palestinian population. Now, people have seen the Israeli flag, and they know what it looks like, the six-pointed star in the middle, and the two blue stripes. And according to David Ben-Gurion, those two blue stripes were the Euphrates and the Nile, which ultimately is what's envisioned as expanded or so-called greater Israel with the West Bank.
Oh, well,
and
we're
going
to have to... Yes, I would like to be able to play just an announcement in terms of Mania, but we can definitely pick this up next Tuesday because... Folks, you need to understand the history. If you don't understand the history, then you won't understand when we talk on this broadcast. I hope I can get this tape to play. Please pardon me.
Investigator and organizing that work in relationship to his medical conditions, his grievances, and petitioning the prisons for relief. So when I see Mumia, his health goes up and down. In September, he, from one visit to the next, had lost like 15 pounds, which he really didn't have the space to lose that much weight. And so I was distressed. And we immediately got into action and got him in contact with his medical care providers, both Tim Livright and Ricardo Alvarez, and the third backup is Barbara Zeller. So I have been making sure that all three of these doctors have all the information to get in to see Mumia and figure it out if they need to, when they need to. And I said to Mumia, I'm coming back the next week. So I came back the next week just to make sure that he hadn't lost any more weight. Like, he's a healthy thin. So he's at 200 pounds. He's at 198, he's getting weighed regularly. That happened in September. We're monitoring his weight as a systemic issue. He's also had some blood pressure issues in terms of that it was high, and he...
So I'm going to leave it there, but we need people to write for Mamiya. We need you to call for Mamiya. Sister Anne's been telling you, Boston Jericho's been telling you, we need you to please stand up for Mamiya. He needs you. And I don't know what else to say. We've been telling you all along that it is our obligation to free our political prisoners. And without us, they can't exist. It is our duty to stand up for them. It is our duty to pick up the work, as Brother Ralph said. And I want to thank everybody who was right on and got on the program tonight, you know, to continue. When they disrupt us, they're hoping that you will not get back on the call. And so you've defeated their objective, and I thank you very much. And hopefully you can have time to join us tomorrow night. We're going to continue this discussion of what it means to be black and how hair can be subversive. Thank you all, and have a good evening. What's the call? Free them all.